This is John Daly in the Great Hall of Fotheringay Castle in Northampton, England. On this 8th day of February, 1587, it is less than 30 minutes now to the hour when Mary, Queen of Scots, is destined to mount the scaffold erected here last night and to suffer execution for the alleged attempt to assassinate Queen Elizabeth of England. Less than 30 minutes, and still the Scottish Queen has not asked for the pardon that can save her life. She is still apparently determined to choose death rather than risk any shadow of guilt upon the faith and church to which she is so passionately devoted. It is known on good authority that Mary can have a pardon. She can save her life if, and this is the great condition, if she will confess her guilt and in so doing throw that mantle of guilt over the whole of the apostolic faith. Here in the great hall of Fotheringay Castle, assembled on all sides of the scaffold, it is like a small stage whose principal property is a plain wooden block shrouded in black velvet.
There are February 1587, Fotheringay Castle, England. You are there.
In the face of death, will Mary, Queen of Scots, sacrifice her head to save the face of her church? The woman held in her hand the immediate destiny of two great forces met in a life and death struggle for world power. All things are as they were then, except for one thing.
You are there.
You are there is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now,
in plain view of a scaffold in Fotheringay Castle and John Daly.
Recall. These 200 or so of the nobility have been assembled in haste from the neighborhood. They're speaking in hushed tones, speculating on whether or not this woman will choose to end her mortal life and thereby become immortal as a martyr to her faith. All last night, this great hall here at Fotheringay Castle was filled with a constant clamor of carpenters' hammers erecting the scaffold. Mary slept in her guarded chambers above the clamor. Bull, the London executioner, and his assistant are waiting now upon the platform, their masks, black masks. Bull, the executioner, is here because the plan, the drama conceived by one man, has at last reached its final act. That man is Queen Elizabeth, Her Majesty's Secretary of State, Sir Francis Walsingham. All Europe knows that to Sir Francis and Sir Francis alone goes the credit for the setting and springing of the trap that snared the Scottish Queen in a plot to murder Queen Elizabeth. Sir Francis, do you think that Mary will yet ask for a pardon at this late hour?
No man can swear what is in the mind of this woman. She loves to crowd the center of the stage with her pretended glory. Her place, however, is not in the galleries, not on the stage, but in the pit.
And by the pit, Sir Francis, do you imply a place with the commoners below the stage or the grave?
A worthy pun. The pit, the grave, is where her body deserves to mold. But Mary is also fickle, deceitful, ambitious. She will yet choose to live. That woman will yet beg for a pardon.
And what, may I ask, Sir Francis, has brought you to this conclusion?
Logic. The laws of logic. The woman is guilty.
I take it you mean that all the guilty ask for a pardon.
No. I speak only of Mary, not all the guilty. That woman has devoted her life to the quest of pardons for all the crimes of her life.
Crimes, Sir Francis?
Many. From her swaddling clothes, she was wrapped in the mantle of death. Her father, James V, was killed on that day of her birth. When he was told on his deathbed that a daughter had been born to him, his dying words were, "Farewell, life came with ain last, and it will pass with ain last." It was a true, dismal prophecy. For Mary's life is shrouded with a dozen deaths and murders. Why, whoever ventured close to her suffered death, violent death. Her first husband, the sickly King Francis of France, then the French poet Castellard, who was discovered in Mary's chamber and sent to the block. Then David Vizio, the fiddler, and her beloved, assassinated and stabbed 50 times by daggers in the hands of the friends of her jealous second husband, Lord Donnelly. And he was blown to bits by the man who became her third husband, Bothwell, who in turn fled from the murder and died in exile. Add to their numbers the deaths of the conspirators, Bellard and Savage and Sir Anthony Babington. This is the woman to whom the gracious Elizabeth granted sanctuary 19 years ago when Mary fled Scotland after murdering her husband. I, the life of Mary Stuart Verily, reeks of death and murder. And all her murders tended toward a singular effort to secure the throne of England from Elizabeth and rule both Scotland and England.
Sir Francis, there is one thing that was not revealed at Mary's trial. You are known to be one of the most accomplished masters in Europe at tracking down criminals.
Come in, Edson.
Sir Francis, just what device did you use to trap Mary?
A barrel of beer.
A barrel of beer?
Yes. You see, I devised a beer barrel with a false bottom through an agent in Mary's confidence who was also in my employ. Needless to say, the fellow did well. He was paid by both parties. I arranged that Mary should use this unique method of postal delivery in her correspondence with the conspirators. A simple matter to intercept the barrel, have the letters copied, and then send them on again.
That's quite ingenious.
Well, not so.
But it would seem, Sir Francis, that you set a trap for Mary.
Only the guilty fall into traps.
Thank you, Sir Francis.
Thank you for the privilege.
There are only 22 minutes left to 8 o'clock. The Queen of the Scots has still not entered this hall, but if Sir Francis Walsingham is correct in his prediction that Mary will ask for a pardon, then she will not mount the scaffold this day. Here in Fotheringay, however, and everywhere in Europe, people are divided over the life and death of this tragic woman. There are many who hold to the opinion that she will die rather than confess her guilt. And for an analysis of that point of view, we take you now to London and Quincy Howe.
Yes, John, some of the best informed people here in London believe that Mary will not ask for a pardon and that the Queen of Scots will mount the scaffold in 21 minutes. Their reasoning runs this way. Mary is the champion, the symbol of the Catholic faith. Elizabeth is the greatest Protestant monarch in the world today. The Catholics want the throne of England, which they lost when Henry VIII, Elizabeth's father, renounced Rome. If they succeed in putting Mary, or any Catholic ruler for that matter, on the English throne, they will not only regain England, but much of what they have lost to the Reformation in Europe as well. In addition, they'll have a free hand in the new world of America, where the exploring, adventuring, colonizing fleets of Elizabeth lay claims to land and gold and wealth that the Pope has granted to Spain. Naturally, the Protestant powers are determined to spread the doctrines of the Reformation all over the world. They've already gained much of Europe, and they mean to hold all that while extending their power to America. Mary now finds herself caught up in this conflict and has been tried and found guilty of an attempt on Elizabeth's life. She protests her innocence, but to save her life, she must confess her guilt. Why then do so many informed observers predict that she will not confess? Because, they say, innocent or guilty, Mary cannot risk damaging the prestige of her church by admitting she had anything to do with an attempt on the life of a Protestant monarch. Is Mary innocent or is she guilty? Even now, in these last moments, there's a sharp difference of opinion. To let our listeners judge for themselves, we'll play some recorded excerpts of Mary's trial, which we broadcast from Fotheringay last October 14th. The first voice you will hear will be that of John Daly, who reported the trial.
The day has risen, and a hush has fallen over the assembled lords and the 36 judges for the Crown of England. Lord Bromley is walking toward the Queen of Scots, and she awaits him calmly, her eyes brilliant. This regent of France and Scotland is past 40. She still retains the beauty and dignity that have captivated so many hearts. Her auburn hair, more red it is, has been busked by the hands of skillful tirewomen and arranged a la Mary Stuart. Lord Bromley is speaking.
I present to you the matter at hand. The most high and mighty Queen, Elizabeth, being not without grief of mind, advertised that you have conspired the destruction of her and of England and the subversion of our religion.
That's the charge. Note that an act originally passed 15 years ago required anyone accused of high treason to be confronted with witnesses. But there are no witnesses against Mary. They're all dead or in prison. Mary replies to the charge.
I came into England to crave aid, which had been promised me. And yet have I been kept in prison ever since, to my grievous wrong. I solemnly protest that I am no subject of my cousin, the Queen of England, nor can I be constrained to appear before your lordship or any other judge whatsoever for any cause whatsoever, save before God alone, the highest judge. This I protest lest I should prejudice mine own royal majesty and my son and successors as well as all other absolute princes. But now I appear personally to the end that I may refute the crimes objected against me. And I call you all to bear witness.
Mary is then accused of having plotted during these past 18 years of her protection, or as Mary calls it, her imprisonment in England, with foreign princes and the Pope to gain her liberty. To this she answers,
I am accused of having written to the Pope to press for my liberty. I confess I have done so, and I should do it again. What human creature, oh good God, would not do the same to escape from a captivity such as mine? But I am not here to answer for any plot to set me at liberty, but for plots against the life of the Queen, my sister.
A new charge is made, a charge which also has no relation to the main charge of murder for which Mary is on trial. Mary is accused of conspiring with Philip of Spain for the invasion of England by a Spanish armada.
I know nothing of a conspiracy or invasion of the realm. I warned my friends to take care not to make any enterprise.
Mary seems to contradict herself. Lord Bromley points out that with one breath, she disclaims knowledge of an invasion of England, but with the next, she speaks of warning her friends not to attempt a plot to invade.
That I knew it had been done, I admit. But that I knew it was going to be done, I deny. As to what foreign princes have done or attempted, I wash my hands of them and decline to be responsible. You're wasting your time. I am not bound to render to you an account of my business and my intelligence as Christian princes. You lay to my charge my letter to Babington that I have conspired to slay Elizabeth. I defy you to show me a single word in them about Elizabeth, and then I shall allow your right to prosecute me.
But Lord Bromley presents much more than a single word. He presents a letter, the famous Babington letter, alleged to have been written by Mary. This was the climactic evidence which strung Babington's neck in a noose and which Lord Bromley hopes will place Mary's head on the block. Lord Bromley reads the damning portion of the Babington letter.
Six noble gentlemen, all my private friends, who for the zeal they bear to the Catholic cause and your Majesty's service, will undertake the tragical execution. The tragical execution. What say you to that, your Majesty? Does not that tragical execution mean that Babington plotted to murder the Queen of England and, as he said, in your Majesty's service?
Whether Babington wrote this or no, I know not. Perhaps he did. But let it be proved that I received it. If Babington or ever any others affirm it, they may lie openly. Other men's crimes are not to be cast upon me. I am a woman, stripped of all aid, left naked and defenseless to mine enemies. I have not what the poorest criminal has, an advocate, someone to speak for him. And my judges are men who seek my ruin. Oh, you do me wrong, sir, in treating me in this fashion. You do me foul wrong. I pray that you give no more credit to those that slander me than I do to such who accuse you. Five are men of doubtful credit which dissemble one thing and speak another. Do not believe them when they say that I consented to the Queen's destruction. I would never make shipwreck of my soul by conspiring the destruction of my dear sister. My lord, I bear no malice to anyone in this assembly. I pardon you for what you have done or said against me. And I say that there is not one in all the company whom I do not wish well. Finally, my lord, I require that I may be heard in full parliament or in person speak to the Queen, my sister, and with the council.
Mary has risen from her throne. She is walking slowly toward the lawyers for the crown. The great hall here at Fotheringay is hushed. No one speaks, no one moves. The Queen of the Scots has stopped before a group of lawyers for the crown. She's smiling at them, smiling graciously now, or is it contemptuously?
Yes, you have behaved rudely enough in your duty and have treated me too roughly for a person who is not accustomed to it, nor learned in the laws of chicanery. But God pardon you and keep me from having any more to do with you.
recorded excerpts from the trial of Mary, Queen of Scots. You've heard the evidence, and now, for some opinions on the question of Mary's guilt or innocence, we take you first to Windsor Castle in London, the Protestant center of the world. Ken Roberts speaking. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
I'm holding you this outside Windsor Castle. Through the open doors, you can hear the great and excited crowd. Right by our door is a man playing a tabor and pipe, and another man clanging a cowbell and shouting, "The Queen is saved! Death to Mary! Death to Jezebel!" I'm going to try and get them to our microphone. First, the man with the tabor and pipe. You, playing the tabor and pipe, do you think Mary is innocent or guilty? The man is very excited. I'll get him to talk later. Meanwhile, let's just try the clangor of the cowbell. He's dressed in woman's clothes. Sir, would you stop that cowbell?
I am an actor. Always ready to address the multitude.
An actor, I see. Is that why you're wearing woman's clothes?
Precisely. I have a woman's part. Come to see me. I'm playing at the Curtain Theater in Finsbury.
Thank you, I shall.
I am playing Christopher Marlowe's Tamburlaine.
A fine play, but I was...
Oh, Bessie, perhaps you'd like to attend Thomas Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy. I have
the Spanish tragedy,
part,
yes. Yes. But what do you think of the Scottish tragedy?
What?
The Scottish tragedy.
No tragedy at all. A happy ending. Mary is a sweet morsel for the devil's mouth.
Strong words, Sir Actor. Do you think Mary is guilty?
Burn her! Burn her! She's not worthy to live. Kill her! Burn her! Stone her! Stone dead hath no fellow. Cut off her head and make no more ado about her.
Thank you, Sir Actor.
Yeah, thank you.
And now our friend of the paper and the pipe is ready to talk to us. Sir, would you tell us, please, is Mary guilty?
Guilty, guilty, guilty. So preached the bishop. Aye, he preached England has escaped a new St. Bartholomew's Day. We are saved. We are saved from the torture of the Inquisition. Death to Mary. And David committed murder and slaying Uriah for his wife, and so would she. St. David was a sinner, and so is she.
Thank you, Sir Player. It can be stated authoritatively that the opinions you have just heard expressed here are quite representative of the crowd outside this mobile unit in front of Windsor Castle. The people are crushing against the gates of the castle, shouting for a view of Queen Elizabeth. Huge bonfires lit last night are still merrily blazing. We'll open our microphones outside now and let you hear the crowd. Listen.
In the shadow of the grim gray walls of Fotheringay, it's bitterly cold. A few inhabitants of the nearby town are gathered here. Some have come out of curiosity, many out of reverence for the Queen of Scots. Many also are kneeling in prayer. A man and his wife are here at our microphone. They will not give their names. I'm going to address the wife first. Good madam, do you believe that Mary is guilty?
Guilty, perhaps, but not of crimes, only of blunders. A woman's blunders are twice cursed. As blunder and as a woman.
And you, sir, do you hold an opinion on this question?
This execution is a blunder. We live well now under Elizabeth. We are content. Why cannot the Queen of England be content to let Mary live? For Mary is her dear sister, so tender a cousin and friend. There are not many of our faith left here in England, but there is meat on our table, whereas but a few years ago there was only salt fish.
Yes. But to what avail is our new house of brick and stone if persecution is...
It's better than our old house of twigs. Do we not enjoy our new pewter plates instead of the old wooden ones? And we even have two silver plates. And our chimney corner and our carpets and pillows. Imagine, sir, we use pillows now. We have windows of glass. We see what forebodes.
Forebodes, indeed. This will be the end of us. There will be no followers of the true faith left in England soon. There will be bitterness and...
This is Don Hollenbeck in Fotheringay Castle. I'm in the chambers of the Queen of Scotland. Her Majesty has granted us an interview. Your Grace, can you tell us at this moment whether you will ask for a pardon?
My dear sister and beloved cousin, the good Queen,
wishes to invest herself with a halo of benefactress before the world, a noble woman who saves the life of a sister queen. But were I to grant her a place among the saints by begging for a pardon, she would lose it soon. For the queen, my sister, is determined upon my death. There would be a dagger in my back or poison in my cup, for she would resort to her ultimate purpose to do away with my life. I am a Scottish burr upon her English bed, and she sleeps uneasily as long as I live.
Then you still believe, Your Grace, that you're the victim of a conspiracy?
I came to England seeking sanctuary. It was promised me. But the very moment I set foot upon English soil, the agents of Elizabeth began to spin their webs to lure me to a dismal grave.
But Your Grace, Sir Francis Walsingham
is... Francis Walsingham. He is an ambitious, a cunning, a heartless liar. He has ruined more innocent persons than the whole of Elizabeth's Privy Council. He's covered the seas and the continent with English exiles and spread over Europe a leprous stain. And this in Elizabeth's realm. The good Queen Elizabeth. Yes, I am the victim of a conspiracy, the greatest conspiracy ever perpetrated on an innocent woman. The conspiracy of Elizabeth and Walsingham.
But in spite of that alleged conspiracy against you, Your Grace, there's still time to save your life.
Save my life? How can I save my life? By confessing my guilt? I have none to confess. I am an innocent woman. How can I save my life when the envoys of Elizabeth threaten to slay me in my bed if I refuse to ask for pardon? Oh, they may consummate their injustice when they please. The Earl of Kent has said that my life would have been the death, as my death will be the life of the Protestant religion. But this knave of Elizabeth is wrong. For my death shall be my triumph over my sister queen, and the victory of my faith over hers.
Thank you, Your Grace. This is Don Hollenbeck. I switch you back to John Daly in the Great Hall.
You have just heard from the Queen's own lips that she will enter this hall in a few moments. Beside me at our microphone is Sir William Pickering, the Speaker of the House of Commons. Sir William, what do you think Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth, will say when she learns of Mary's decision to die?
Her Majesty has no knowledge that the Scottish one is to be beheaded this morning.
No knowledge, sir?
Precisely. No knowledge whatsoever.
But that's impossible. The whole world knows.
I repeat... The Queen has no knowledge that the Scottish one is to be beheaded this morning.
Well, Sir William, if Queen Elizabeth did know, what would be her wish? Would she oppose this execution?
Certainly. She would never allow it to come to pass. Elizabeth has pardoned many rebels and winked at many treasons. After Mary's trial...
Excuse me, Sir William. The Queen of Scots is about to enter this hall of execution. She's accompanied by her ladies-in-waiting, and the Earl of Kent and the Earl of Shrewsbury... Together. Wait a minute. The Queen has stopped at the entrance. She's speaking to the Earl of Kent. The entrance is too far off for us to hear what she's saying, but Don Hollenbeck is there. Come in, Hollenbeck.
The Queen has refused to enter the hall unless accompanied by her two ladies in waiting.
No, no.
I pray you, my lord.
No.
I pray you permit them that their eyes and ears may see how patiently their queen and mistress died, true and constant to her religion.
I will do it.
Then I do not enter the hall.
You will. I command it. In the name of Her Majesty.
Let us give our consent, my lord. What harm can come of it?
Our women would make a scene.
My lord, let us be kind.
I tell you, they will dip their handkerchiefs in Her Grace's blood. Whereon it is very unmeet for us to give allowance.
Come, come, my lord. The hour is upon us. Our queen commands. Jane Kennedy, Elizabeth Curl, you may follow Her Grace into the hall. Let us proceed at once.
This is John Daly again. The Queen of Scots has passed through the door. And now she's approaching the scaffold. She walks with difficulty. Two troopers are assisting her, and her ladies-in-waiting walk close behind. The earls, Kent and Shrewsbury, walk a little to the left of the Queen, and she is followed by the Protestant Dean of Peterborough. The nobles in this great hall have fallen grimly silent. Her servants are weeping, but Mary, the Queen of the Scots, holds her head high. She's reached the scaffold now, is ascending the two steps of the platform upon which stands the executioner, Bull, with his assistant. Mary has turned. She now faces the nobles with great dignity. She's cast off the soldiers like a cloak and stands erect on her own weakened feet. Bull has moved toward her. He reaches for her mantle. It is the custom to unclothe. Mary waves him back.
Me. Come. I was not wont to have my clothes plucked off by such grooms.
The Queen's ladies-in-waiting, Jane Kennedy and Elizabeth Curl, have come forward, and they are removing from her head the dress of lawn, the chain of pomander. Now they're unclasping the Agnus Dei about her neck. The veil of lawn is being unfastened from her caul, and her black gown of satin is... The Dean of Peterborough has moved forward, and he is speaking to Mary.
The throne of the great judge of heaven is laid open.
No, no, give me a brief.
The boy, your life.
Please, Master Dean, trouble me not.
The particular sentence.
I will not hear you. I am resolved in my own fate.
All the enemies of the king.
Please, Master Dean, you have nothing to do with me, nor I with you.
All the enemies of the
king. None of you, Domine.
Mary has knelt, a crucifix clasped to her breast. She is clothed now in a crimson petticoat. The executioner, Bull, masked, has knelt before Mary. His assistant has also knelt. It is the custom of executioners to beg forgiveness.
I forgive you with all my heart. For I hope this death should give an end to my trouble.
No!
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 Mary has spoken the last word of French to her ladies-in-waiting. She's begged them not to cry.
February day. 1587, Mary, Queen of Scotland and the Isles, dies, and the Reformation lives on.
To The Execution of Mary, Queen of Scots, another in the series You Are There. This program was presented originally by CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, and came to you through the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.